We are holding on Kofiyud Aleph Omid Beis, the yesterday about the whole matter of knots by knots, where you have a neutral pair of food that absorbed one type, milchut or fleishik, and now you want to eat it with the other type. So we had the example of we had fish that was roast fish that was placed in a fleishik, and we want to eat it with milk. Or we also talk about a radish that was cut using a fleishik knife. Can you now eat that radish with milchut? So we had different opinions on the subject. As far as the fish, we had a machlokas rav and shmuel, whether you're allowed to, not by not, is it allowed or not allowed? And we said as far as the radish also, we said there might be a distinction that the radish you wouldn't because after all it absorbed, so we said it actually with the radish. Conceivably, you could taste it. You could have a yid taste it, see if it tastes of meat, and if it does, then don't eat it with milchut, but otherwise you could. So now the Gemara continues. On this topic. So the Gemara says, "Amar Chizkiya Mishum Abaya." And by the way, Chizkiya usually in the Gemara is an earlier Amora, or like he's from the transitional generation of Tanoim and Amoraim. Usually Chizkiya is a Rebbe of Rav Yechon. Here we have Chizkiya saying something in the name of Abaya, so clearly he can't be that Chizkiya. It's a later Chacham of that name. Anyway, he says Hilchasa, the bottom line halacha, Durgim Sha'ola Bakara, fish that was placed in a fleishik in a hot fleishik plate. And afterwards, you will be allowed to eat that fish with milchik because this is not by not. It absorbed fleishik from the plate, but not enough to aser it to eat it with milchik. This is one point the post can make because this is b'diyevet. You can't do such a thing like a chila. On the other hand, but on the other hand, if you cut a radish with a fleishik knife, also, and afterwards you would not be allowed to eat that radish with kutach, with the milk dip that we talked about, yesterday. Meaning, assuming that if we didn't taste it, or if we tasted it and it has a taste of fleishiks in it, if it doesn't, then it would indeed be allowed, as we learned yesterday. As far as that case, by the way, if we're saying that the radish absorbed from the fleishik and therefore you can't eat it with it, therefore you can't now eat it with milchut, so it's a three-way machlokas apostim. How much of it is considered to absorb? How much it's considered to have absorbed? The Rosh holds it absorbs kadei klifa, which is a peel's thickness. So according to him, in other words, if you cut a radish with a fleishik knife, you would have to peel off a layer of the radish where you cut, and the rest you would be allowed to eat with milchut. Then you have the Ravid and the Ra'ah hold that you need more kedei netila. You need a finger's thickness to be removed before you can eat it with milchut. And then you have a third opinion. You have the Rashba holds the whole thing. The Rashba holds the whole thing absorbs fleishik, and therefore you wouldn't be able to eat it with milchut. So the Mechaber paskins that you would need kedei netila. And then Amos says that we should. Then Amos says that no, we have to consider. We have to consider the whole thing. And he goes to discuss. He goes on to discuss what happens if you chopped up the radish into little pieces. Then you would already need shishim, but you wouldn't need shishim to negate the whole radish because the whole radish didn't become ulcer. It just absorbed meat. So you would just need shishim. You would just need 60 times the amount that it can be estimated to have absorbed. This is all again if it absorbed meat, which at least the meat was heter. If it absorbed from iser, if you cut the radish using a non-kosher knife, then that's a whole other matter. Then you have more complications over there, because as we learned yesterday, then you have what's called isura bala. Then to begin with, what it absorbed is iser, and then it's a little more complicated than that. As far as this whole matter of knot by knot, anyway, there are a number of points that the Rishonim and Achronim make. One thing is, we're talking about over here, for example, we said fish that was cooked in a, that fish that was placed in a fleishik plate, or we're talking about a radish that was cut using a flaccid knife. In both cases, we're talking about there's a kaylee involved. So then we can start talking about knot by knot. On the other hand, for example, they talk about, let's say you cooked vegetables together with one type. Let's say you cooked vegetables together with milk. You would not, in fact, be allowed to eat those with flaccid because they're already, once the taste got absorbed directly into a food, then we're not going to say knot by knot. So a practical example of that is, for example, if you have, for example, something that was actually cooked together with milfit, then you can't eat it with flaccid or vice versa. But for example, if let's say you have something that was warmed up in a flaccid oven or a flaccid microwave or whatever, so you can't eat it, and you can't eat it itself with milk, but you can eat it before or after milk, and you don't have to wait the amount of time. And then in addition, there's also points about we're talking about cutting with a knife or putting in a hot plate. It's a whole different matter if it was actually cooked in a plate. It was a whole other matter if it was actually cooked in a flaccid pot or whatever. And again, the whole thing is really only b'dieved. You have to make sure to keep these things separate. So don't be cutting a radish with a flaccid knife if you're going to eat it with milk. And don't be putting fish in a flaccid plate if you're going to be eating it with milk. And vice versa. So the Gemara points out, for hani mili tznoin. Now this applies when we're saying as far as a radish, we mean dafka a radish or other sharp vegetables like that. The agaf chufei bola, because of its sharpness, it absorbs the fat that's on the knife. So in other words, the Rishonim talk about, are we talking about that the knife had not been wiped off at all, or are we talking about even the knife had been wiped, but nevertheless it still previously absorbed flaccid, and now you're going to cut the radish with it, and because the radish is sharp, it's actually going to bring out the flavor, and now you're going to have that even if the knife hadn't been used in 24 hours, and usually we say, the taste has deteriorated. Here, when it comes to this, we wouldn't say that, because the fact is that the radish is sharp, and therefore that causes the flavor to regain its potency. So that's why you have this din as far as a radish. Aval, but on the other hand, the Gemara points out kishrus, but if instead you cut with it a kishrus, which is a type of cucumber or melon or something like that, that's not sharp. In fact, that's sweet. So the fattiness doesn't really get absorbed. So goder lebe paskiv ochel. So all you would have to do is rub off or scrape. You'd have to scrape off the area, the place where you cut the ochel, and then you could eat it with the other. Then you could eat it with the other species. It's not gonna get so deeply absorbed. So you need to scrape off that area where it was cut. But that's it. As we've shown and point out, you can't just rinse it off. If it was something solid or semi-solid, then you could wipe it off or rinse it off. But here we're talking about a cucumber or a melon or something like that. So then if you wash it off, it's going to get absorbed more deeply. Therefore, you have to scrape off the outer layer. But that's still less than plifa. That's still less than having to peel away an outer layer. So again, that would be with a knife that may not have been cleaned. If the knife is clean, then you have even less of an issue. Because unlike the radish, it's not going to cause anything that the knife previously absorbed to get exuded again. Okay. So the Gemara says, what about kilchi delifta? So what about if you use this knife to cut slices of turnip? So then, surely it's also allowed to eat them with the opposite species. You would cut it with a flaccid knife. You can then eat it with milchit. For the same reason, because turnips are sweet, and therefore, unlike the radish, which causes the flavor to come out here with turnips, the same kind of thing, then it won't be a problem. On the other hand, if you use it to cut slices of beets, asiri, then it's also to eat them with the opposite type, because beets are also sharp. And the Gemara continues, the posach bohu delifta. Now, if what he does is he alternates and he cuts a slice of, if he cuts a slice of turnip and a slice of beets, a slice of turnip and a slice of beets, then all of them you're allowed to eat with milchik. Because since every time he cut a slice of turnip, and we're saying that the sweetness of that doesn't cause the knife to exude, Therefore, even when you afterwards cut the slice of beet, it's not going to have such an effect that it's going to bring out the flavor, and therefore that the beet will absorb the fleishik, and therefore you're fine. So you need to alternate back and forth like that. And the post can point out the same thing would be also, for example, if you alternate between turnips and radishes or other things like that. On the other hand, the post can point out that it really would only work with turnips like that, that are particularly sweet, and they're also hard. It wouldn't necessarily work with other kinds of vegetables as well. Okay, so you have all these details about what's allowed and what's not allowed when you, in this case of nat bar nat. So Rashi summarizes, when it comes to the dogim sha'ola bakara, the fish that was placed in a hot fleshed plate, so we're saying you're allowed to eat them with milchik, because then what you really have is the nois and tam, nat bar nat, especially because the plate is usually washed clean between one and the next, because otherwise it would be disgusting. As opposed to, Rashi points out, knives, people don't always do that, people don't always clean the knife between cutting one thing and another, so therefore now you're going to have, again, with a radish, you're going to have a strong nois and tam, and also you have something called the pressure of the knife, which also causes substance to be exuded from it and then absorbed into the radish. So as a practical matter, one thing that comes out of this is when you buy cut fruit in a store, for example, so in large commercial stores, there's much less of an issue with it because they don't use the same knife for different things. They don't want to do cross contamination, if nothing else because of allergies. So then you have more of a heter to buy their cut fruit, because you have more reason to assume that their knives were used dafka for cutting fruit. You may have issues with the knives being washed together with other things. That's another matter. But even then, that might not be as much of an issue. On the other hand, if you're buying from a small store where they may well use the same knife for cutting non-kosher meat or fish, and then they may use it for the fruits or vegetables, then you have more of an issue. So Tosfos mentions in this connection, for example, that by the same token, don't cut things like garlic or leeks or onions using a milchik knife, because again, you have the same problem. They're very sharp, and therefore they're going to absorb the milchik. If you do, then you put them in a pot with boiling water, then fine, then shishim will be enough. On the other hand, if you cut it with a non-kosher knife belonging to a goy, then you're going to have the problem of haticha nafas nevela, and then you're going to have 60 keneged the whole vegetable. So you have the various detailed dinim in here. And as far as dogim sha'ola bakara. Okay. More topics about bas b'chalav. The Gemara says, "Bominer of Dini mir of Nachman." Rav Dini asked Rav Nachman, "Maula anuchi kadet milcha gabe kadet kamfa." Are you allowed to place a jug of salt, of a container of salt, next to a container of kamfa? Kamcha is like we learned yesterday about the rakuta. It's a dip whose main ingredient is milk. Kamcha is something similar. It's another kind of dip. Maybe there are two different names for the same dip. Maybe kamcha and putah are different. But the point is that they're both milchik dips. So Jimmy is asking of Nachman whether you can store them one next to the other. What we're talking about. So different rishonim have different understandings. Are we talking about that it's just putting them next to one another? So is the concern, in other words, that maybe when you're taking a spoonful of kamcha, you might accidentally drop something to the salt without realizing it, and later on you're going to use the salt together with fleishik. So that would be one way of looking at the concern. That the Ram brings that as one possibility. It comes from Rabbeinu Hananel, the Rambam also holds this way. But the problem is that if they're touching, then one may absorb from the other. The salt is able to draw things to it, the same way as it draws out blood from meat. So now maybe therefore it might draw out some of the moisture of the kamcha, and now you have the salt has absorbed some milchix. And then the Ritvar gives another point as well. These are both things that are used very often, and therefore you might easily mix up one with the other, or again something might fall from one into the other. So are you allowed to do that? So you're allowed to put them one next to the other. Amalei Sereb Nachman says also you're not allowed to because of these various considerations. Now Tosfos points out then that would be as far as, for example, milk and kamcha. On the other hand, for example, you would be allowed to put milchix next to fleishik. Tosfos says in a box, to put it in modern terms, for example, you could put milchix and fleishik next to one another in the fridge because you're going to be careful that they don't get false contaminated. Here, you're not going to think, you're not going to realize when you're taking some putach, some kamcha, that you might accidentally drop a little bit of into the salt and not realize that you're going to end up using it for meat and vice versa. So therefore, there's more of a concern there as opposed to milchix and fleishik. People are careful. But with that said, the Ramah does say that yesh machmir machatchila. There are those who say machatchila you should be machmir, and so where it's unnecessary, then you should be careful. So even for example, a fridge, if you can help it, then that seems from that don't put the milk right next to the fleish, put something else between them. Okay. What about if Jimmy says the chalamai? What about if you have instead of a jar of salt? What if you have a jar of vinegar and you want to put that next to a jar of putach? Is there a problem there also? Again, vinegar is also used sometimes to add to foods. Amalei said, I'm not going to say shorty, that's multer. Sort of give me ask to Maishna, well, what's the difference? Why by salt next to kamcha are we concerned and vinegar? When you measure out for me a pour of salt, as my payment for answering you, then I'll give you an answer. Meaning, in other words, like Reb Nachman is sort of fobbing him off, like as a joke. We had this expression earlier in the Masechta as well. So in other words, like he's saying, like you figure it out yourself. If you don't want to figure it out, then fine, measure me out a pour, a very large quantity of salt, and I'll give you the answer. Another explanation Rashi mentions elsewhere is it means teichel. So teichel, what points out would mean to measure. Another point, teichel can also mean if you eat. Even if you eat a pour of salt, if salt makes you sharp, you may still not be able to figure out the reason for yourself unless you put your mind into it. Okay, so my timer, what is the actual reason? So either in the end, Rav Nachman did tell Rav Jimmy, or Rav Jimmy figured it out himself, or the editors of the Gemara put it in for us. Anyway, so the actual difference is, hi, Issa, Yisura Be'ene, because when it comes to this milk-based dip, the Issa is going to be present over there, because Kutach is very thick. So if anything falls into it, So if putach falls into salt, then it's going to be there's going to be an actual solid or semi-solid substance of it over there. So therefore, it won't be bottle. As opposed to though, if putach falls into vinegar, then the vinegar itself, it's liquid. So therefore the issur won't be noticeable. It gets mixed with the vinegar, and it's not really going to give a flavor to it either. So therefore, if you do end up using some of that vinegar with meat, then it's not so bad. The taste of it will be bottled. So that would be the difference. Okay. More on this topic of kamcha and things that get mixed into it. The Gemara says, "I hope by goyzla the nafal akada to kamcha." It happened once that a young pigeon fell into a jar of kamcha, of putach, of this milk-based dip. Different Rishonim discuss. What was the story with this pigeon? Does it mean that the Gemara is going to distinguish whether it was raw or roasted? But we have to also ask, was it hot or was it cold? And there were different understandings about that. The Ritva explains that we're talking about that it was still hot. And Tosfos earlier in the Masechta, in the previous Perek, says that, no, even when it's cold, because it's soft, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. But at this point, it fell into a jar of kamcha. So now, of course, the bird is fleshic, and the kamcha is milchum. So is it allowed? So the Gemara says, Shau Rav Chinina of Brei D'Ravim from Pashrunia, Rav Chinina, the son of Rava from Pashrunia, said that it's mutter, and you're going to be allowed to eat that bird. Even though the kutach also contains salt, nevertheless, it's not a problem. Amar Rava, so Rava points out, Manachakim Mishri, Kiyai Gavna, who would be so wise as to be able to be matter in such a case? Elad Rav Chinina of Brei D'Ravim from Pashrunia. Only a great Tamil Chacham, like Rav Chinina of Brei D'Ravim from Pashrunia, would be able to be matter such a thing. Now, why? The question is, doesn't the kamcha contain salt? And we said before, kasavar, and we said before that salt, something salted, Shmuel said, maliyach hareyu kareseyach, that when something is salted, it's tantamount to it being roasted, and to it being boiling, and in that case, it should be the equivalent of this bird, of this shechted bird falling into hot milk, and it should be also, no. Because Rav Chinina holds, you know when Shmuel says that when something is salted, it's considered like it's boiling, that's only where it's so salted that it's not edible. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean actually not edible at all? Rashi says it means, in other words, it would be uncomfortable to eat because there's so much salt in it. You would have to rinse it first. You would have to soak it and rinse it in water. So, like, for example, Rashi describes the kind of salting that's used to preserve meat. So, like to make beef jerky or something or something like that, is the amount of salting that we're talking about salting. On the other hand, Tosfos says that no, So Tosfos discusses that a little bit. First, Tosfos brings from Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael, one of Balei HaTosfos, who holds that it would only be Einin Necho Machnas Milchai, only if it was salted the way that you would salt, for example, the way that you would salt leather in order to preserve it. So again, it would be similar to what Rashi is saying about salting it enough to preserve it. On the other hand, Tosfos goes on to bring, Rabbi Natan goes on to say in Tosfos that no, what it means is when the meat is salted to the extent that you salt when you're kashering meat, then that would also be considered Eina Necho Machmas Milchai. On top of that, the Ramah points out that nowadays we're not really so expert to know how much is considered salted that Eina Necho Machmas Milchai, and therefore in general, whenever you have salting over there, even when it was salted, only the kind of salt of minimal salting that you would do to roast it, then the Ramah says there might be a problem over there. In any case, here in the Gemara over here, the kamcha does not contain that much salt. So therefore, Aval Hai Kutcha, when it comes to this Kutach, this Kamfa, Hare Necho Machmas Milchai, it can be eaten despite the salt. It's perfectly edible. There's not that much salt in it, relatively, and therefore, now when this bird fell into it, even Shmuel is not going to hold that the Kutach is going to be considered hot, and therefore the bird will be mutter. However, the Gemara says, Vahani Mili Chai. However, that's only going to work if the bird was chai. Now, chai can mean alive, but of course it doesn't mean that over here. If it was alive, there wouldn't be a question in the first place. So the word chai has two, when it comes to something that's already shechted, has two basic meanings. It can mean raw, or it can mean cold. Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim hold that the only distinction the Gemara is going to make is whether it's roasted, is whether it's raw or roasted. And the idea would be, again, if it's roasted, even if it's cold, then it can still absorb because it's a bird, and therefore it's soft, and therefore it can more easily absorb. On the other hand, the Ritva and the Rashba and a number of other Rishonim hold that chai over here means that it means cold, as opposed to the Gemara is going to say tzoli, which would mean that if it's hot. So this is only if it's chai, then it would be mutter. Abel tzoli, but if it was tzoli, if it was roasted, boy klifa, then you would have to peel off the outer layer of it. So again, does that mean that if it was raw, then you can just rinse it off and that's that, but if it was roasted, then you have to peel off the outer layer, even if it's cold? Or would it mean? Or would it mean that even if it's roasted, it's a problem only if it's hot, not if it's cold? The reason why the Rishonim and fine if it's roasted and it's hot. Why would it be a problem? Why would we say that all you need is Kadeh Klifa? You only need to peel off one layer. Wouldn't more of it absorb? And this goes back to what we started talking about yesterday about the concept in halacha called Tatar Gavar, the lower one overpowers. Here, the brood fell into milk, and therefore, and the milk was cold. And again, we're saying the salt in it is not enough to make it considered hot. Therefore, that overpowers it to the extent it doesn't absorb all the way through. It only absorbs Kadeh Klifa. It only absorbs a peels layer, and therefore that's good enough. So you have to remove that. So you would have to peel off the outer layer of the bird. The Eispei Pili, on the other hand, though, if there are cracks in the flesh of the bird, then it's going to absorb through those cracks. Kulei also, then the whole thing is going to be also. The imetabel, if the bird had spices applied to it, so also that softens it up, like we learned previously. So now it absorbs even when it's cold or even when it's raw. Kulei also, then the whole thing is going to be also. So now Rashi says that all of these distinctions are only if it was roasted. And again, you have different understandings of what roasted means in this context. If it's chai, if it's raw, then it wouldn't matter either way. It would be enough. Either way, it would be enough to rinse it off. And that's the accepted halacha. So in short, in other words, if it's now there are opinions. There are opinions. Opinions of Rishonim and then the Shach brings it in Shulchan Aruch over there that some of these distinctions would apply even if it's raw but the accepted halacha is basically if it's raw then there's generally no problem. All you need to do is rinse it off. If it's roasted, then it's going to depend we're saying if it's hot versus if it's cold, and if it has cracks, or if it was spiced. Okay. Now let's talk about blood. We started talking about blood meat yesterday, and then we continued to discuss matters of boss of the halav. So now returning to matters of blood, we talked about, for example, putting a bay doogie. We talked about putting a pan under roasting meat. Can you talk about when that allowed or not allowed as well? So the Gemara says, "When Amar Shmuel Kika Shachosah Halei Basar." If you take a loaf of bread and you cut over it roasted meat, meaning the meat was a. So that now, normally, again, when you roast, salt a certain amount, you salt it a minimal amount, and then you roast it. And between the salting and the roasting, then it'll take out the blood. So the Rishonim explain over here that the case we're going to be talking about over here is where you roasted it without that salting first. So now you cut it over bread, and now drippings of it gone onto the bread. So then you would be also to eat that bread. Now it would be also to eat that bread because of the blood, because of the blood that it absorbed. The meat itself, fine, will be mutter because the blood that's still left in it is dam ha'evarim shalei pirush, the blood that still remained in its place and didn't go out of its place, so it won't be also, but it left there the meat and gone onto the bread, therefore it's going to be also. There are Rishonim who learn the Rive of learns that if it was roasted enough that you would be able to eat it, then we're not talking about that. And according to him, the whole problem over here is Matasayan. However, the Gemara says v'hani mili de'aspik. However, that would only be if the meat was red before it was roasted, meaning, in other words, therefore it shows the animal was injured or bruised or something while it was alive, and therefore you have a collection of blood over there, and there's a concern that the roasting is not going to get all that blood out. So that's one way of explaining it. There's a different explanation that we shouldn't have. That aspic means if the bread actually turned red, and then you'd have a problem with marisayin. And vahani milid avrei, and furthermore, that would only apply only if the liquid penetrated all the way through the bread. Then we have to be concerned that it's blood, or at least that there's marisayin of it. Rabbi Gershom has a different explanation. He says if it didn't go all the way through, then you just have to remove the red part, but the rest of it would be mutter. Furthermore, that applies only if the liquid that comes out of the meat is thick, and it is thick like the consistency. if it's more liquidy, less than blood, then it's not a problem, because then that's not blood, that's moihel, that's liquid, that's his juices that come out of the meat, and therefore the bread would be mutter. Rabbi Nagershim has a gives it the other way around. He says that if the liquid is thick, then fine, it's not going to penetrate all through the bread, then you can just remove the part that absorbed that. But if it was a thin liquid, then it's going to spread more effectively throughout the bread, and then the whole bread is going to be also. That's how he learns. Okay. So the Gemara says Shmuel shoddi leva kalbe. Now suppose you had bread like that, that roasted meat was cut on, and then you had on top of it, and now you have this liquid that came out of it, and you have concern that it might be blood. So Shmuel shoddi leva kalbe. So Shmuel would throw such bread to his dog. He wouldn't eat it because again he held that it's also. On the other hand, Rav Huna, Yoiv Le Shame, on the other hand, Rav Huna would give it to his Mishoris, to his Shamash to eat, so he wouldn't eat it himself, but he would give it to his Shamash. Now, his Shamash is a Yid, so the question is, Monafshach, well, either way you look at it, why is Rav Huna doing that? Eat Shori, if it's perfectly allowed, the Kulal Mashori, then it's Mutter to everybody, and Rav Huna himself ought to eat it. Eat Osir, and if it's Osir, because with the liquid that came out and got absorbed into the bread is blood, the kulam also, then it's gonna be also to everybody. And how can Rav Huna be machshel his mishoris by giving it to him? And the answer is, it's not that it's also shiny Rav Huna, danina daite. The difference is Rav Huna was finicky. For him, if he had bread like that that absorbed those drippings from meat, then he would find it disgusting to eat. But it would actually be mutter at that point. It's been roasted enough that anything comes out of it is meat juice and not blood. So the Gemara continues, Rava Ochele, Rava would actually eat it. Rava would actually eat it, even if it had all those things, even if it was thick, even if it was whatever, as long as it was completely roasted. Rava health's not a problem at all. Anything that comes out of it at that point, even if it seems identical to blood, Halacha won't consider it blood anymore, now that it went through the salting process or the roasting process, as the case may be, then anything that comes out of it is mutter. V'kori le chamar basar. And Rava gave it the nickname, the wine of meat. In other words, he held that it's like wine. It's just a red liquid that comes out of the meat. And in other words, the idea would be, even if we say before, like the Raivid, that the Gemara had brought up a concern of Marasayan, Rava held there's no problem of Marasayan either, and therefore it would be perfectly allowed. So that's the halacha. Once you roast it enough, once you roast it the proper amount, then all the blood is gone, and the same thing after, and then it would be mutter. The amount of that is considered, it says in Shulchan Aruch, when it's roasted half of the degree that it would be completely done. At that point, most people would eat it. It would be rare, but it would be rare meat, but it's enough that most people will eat it, and therefore that's fine, and any juice that comes out of it, as much as it's red and as much as it looks like blood, etc., would be mutter. We learned anyway previously that blood that was salted or that was cooked is technically not osim in atara anyway. The whole thing is osim in rabbanon. So therefore, the same rabbanon who asked it can say in a case like this, once it was roasted enough, it will be mutter. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Getting back to the matter of collecting drippings from meat. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Ein manichin kli tachas baser. You can't put a pan under the meat to catch the drippings, the fat drippings from it. This is the beit dugi that we talked about yesterday. Actually, yichla called mara ad mumis chaboy, until all of the reddish stuff that comes out of the meat has finished coming out. In other words, up until that point, you have blood exuding out, and therefore you're going to wind up having blood in this beit dugi, in this container. That you're going to put to catch the drippings. So therefore, you have to wait until you see that the reddish stuff is coming out. Now, how does this fit with what we just said before? So now, in other words, the Gemara is going to ask soon that, wait a minute, then we just said before that Shmuel's saying that anytime you have red stuff coming out of it, any liquid that comes out of it until it's finished roasting is also, and here we're saying until the red stops coming out. So we'll get back to that point soon. But the Gemara says, Menoya din, and how do we know, how can you tell that no more blood is coming out? And the answer is, Mazutra, Mishmedra Papam, Mishatala Timrosai. Once you see smoke coming from the meat, then it would mean, in other words, that the meat itself is smoking, then you know for sure that now it's not exuding blood anymore. That's actually first explanation. Second explanation means that the coals that you're roasting it over start producing smoke. As long as blood is dripping on them, then every time blood drips on it, it's going to kind of put out the coals, and you're not really going to have smoke. But afterwards, once the blood is finished dripping, and you have fat dripping, well, fat is going to cause the fire to become bigger, and then you'll have the coals will produce more smoke. But Maskus or Rabashi, but Rabashi says, how could you rely on that? The Dimatata Mata Yilamatla Mata. Maybe only the bottom part of the meat, the part closer to the coals, is now roasted enough that it's not exuding blood anymore. And the other part, the higher up part, the part further away from the fire, is still exuding blood. So how would that work? Ela Amar Ravashi. So rather, Ravashi says, no, less taitakanta. There's no way of fixing up the matter. Ela, what do you do? We talked about this yesterday, that Amman brings us aloha and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Ela mishti de tauti gelalei milcha. What you should do is put a couple of lumps of salt into the beidugi, into this pan, and that way the idea is, put, Rashi explains actually that you put both. The reason why two is Rashi says put one on the meat and the other one in the keli in this pan. And that way, in both places, the salt will draw out the blood, and then omashafye, and then it'll draw out the blood. And then after that you won't have a problem. But otherwise, it's true, you might conceivably have that blood is coming out, and then you might have an issue with it. So in fact, the Rif and the Rambam learned that you could even do that to begin with, and that'll help. Even when blood is definitely coming out, the salt will draw it to it, and that's that. On the other hand, the Rashba learns that it means that, no, this is only going to work after it started smoking. As we said before, even on top of that, again, it's smoking, but it might not all be done enough to the point where all the blood has come out. At that point, you can use the salt to draw out the rest of the, blood. Tosfos does bring up the point that wait a minute, what about Efshel Sechter also? Didn't we say that when Heter absorbs Isser, then we said that even if you were able to get out all the Isser, then the Heter would still remain Osir. Why don't we say over here, when the fat is dripping out, then already you have blood is mixed with it, and therefore you're not going to be able to remove the blood. So Tosfos says, no, the reason is because in those cases, the issur doesn't actually completely go out; it just becomes bottle. But over here, we're talking about the salt would actually remove all of the blood. On the other hand, Tosfos brings from Halachas Gedolos that if you use too much salt, then on the contrary, it's going to make it difficult to actually get out the blood. And how do you get it exactly? So therefore, we can't necessarily rely on. Rashi brings from Halachas Gedolos that it does mean you have to do dafka two lumps of salt, only a little bit. If you do too much, then it'll prevent the salt from being effective. On the contrary, it makes the blood then watery, and then it gets mixed up with the fat. Tosfos brings that point also, and says therefore in practice you may not necessarily be able to use that. You may not be able to use that method. So the bottom line is you have to wait until it's half roasted, and then at that point, and then you can put the beidugi over there to collect the fat, or you can salt the meat, which anyway you're supposed to salt the meat before you roast it, and then already that gets out, and that gets out the meat, and now you'll be able to roast it, and everything that comes out is fine. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Omelet of Acha Breded of Ikka, Lord of Ashi." So the Acha Breded of Ikka asks Rav Ashi, "Though Umiyom Shmuel Hachi, did Shmuel really say that once any reddish stuff stops dripping out from the meat, then you're allowed to put a beidugi over there?" Didn't we say before that Shmuel said that if you cut bread, that if you cut roast meat on top of bread, then that bread is going to be also to eat because of the blood that exudes from the liquid that exudes from the roasted meat, which we're concerned that there's still going to be blood in it. And Rashi points out that we have to be talking about where the meat is already ready to eat, because that's when you cut it. So at that point, then, it should be already past the point where you're concerned about blood coming out. And why was Shmuel saying then that you can't eat the bread? And the answer is shiny horse, and it's different in that case. Because of the pressure of the knife, therefore it causes it to exude more blood that wouldn't have come out. So again, when you have, the blood remains within the meat, then it's not such a problem. And whatever comes out during the roasting, fine, it came out and that's it. But now when even though you roasted the meat and now you press on it with a knife, that causes more blood to come out of it, and therefore Shmuel is saying that that's a problem. But if you hadn't cut it with a knife, then there wouldn't be an issue because then it all remains within the meat and therefore that would be fine. So you have this consideration. On the other hand, we're saying that no, once we, as we said before, that Rava says that there comes a point when you can call it chamar basar, the wine of meat, and then you don't have to worry about it because then at that point, whatever comes out of it, no matter how blood-like it appears, is really at that point not blood, it's sir or moihel, it's juice or it's juice or whatever you want to call it, and therefore it's fine and there's no ister of blood in it. Talking more about salting meat and about blood, the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Nachman, Dogim ve'oifas shemolchan zeim zeh, if you salt fish together with chicken, asurin, then the fish are going to be asur because they're going to absorb blood from the chicken. So now in the case of the fish, you're not salting the kasher. You don't need to kasher fish like that. But we're talking about you just salted them to prepare them, and as opposed to the birds, the chicken or whatever kind of bird it is, you're actually talking about salting them to kasher then. And Rashi points out we don't just mean birds, all the more so regular meat, because regular meat is even tougher. But we're talking about even bird meat, which is softer. You don't have the problem with the bird meat, but you are going to have a problem with the fish. Tosfos brings up that Rashbam asks, why do we say Shemolchem Zeim Zeh? Why don't we just say fish that was salted together with birds are also. And then Tosfos says, because then we would misunderstand and say that if the fish are salted and the birds are not, then it would be a problem, and that's not so. The problem is only because of the blood that exudes from the birds and then gets into the fish. So that would be an issue. But the Gemara asks, hey, Fidami. But what's the scenario? The Rosh does point out that it would actually only be also kedei klifa. It would only, even if we say maliach kedei seach, that what's salted is considered like boiling. Nevertheless, again, it's not going to absorb all the way. Just kedei klifa, just a peel thickness. On the other hand, the Rama brings from other Rishonim who disagree with that, and in the end, therefore, would mean that you would have a problem with that also. But the Gemara asks, hey, Fidami, he brings from Aruch, an important sefer of halacha called Aruch, that says that yesh oistrim, that all the fish would be also unless there's 60 times keneged the birds. And he goes on to say there's a difference whether the fish have been scaled or not. If they still have their scales on, then we can say that they're tougher, and then they're not going to then it's not such a problem. They're not going to absorb so much from the bird meat from the chicken because they still have to exude their own juices as they're being salted, and then they're not going to absorb so quickly. So it would only be a problem if the fish have had their scales removed, says the Rama. Okay, but the Gemara asks, hey, Kidomi, but what's the scenario? Either cliche in a minukov, if you're talking about that you're salting it in a keli that doesn't have holes, and as we talked about before, when you're salting meat to kasher it, you anyway are supposed to use a keli with holes so the blood can drain away. Then even if you salted different pieces of chicken together, it would be also because one of them is going to, each of them is going to exude blood, and then it's going to get absorbed into that one or into the other ones. And on the other hand, if we're talking about a keli that has holes, I feel the dog and boy nami shari, then even if it's fish together with chicken, it should also be mutter because the blood is just going to drain away. In other words, the logic is the same way as you're allowed to kasher a bunch of pieces of meat together. So why should it be a difference? If you're gonna salt chicken and fish, the chicken to kasher it, the fish to just salt it, what would be the difference? Either way, the blood is going to drain away. Especially because, again, the point is both of them are exuding juices. The chicken is exuding its blood. The fish is exuding its blood also. But fine, blood of fish is not also, but it's exuding its various juices. And therefore, why is there going to be an issue? And the answer is lower than the Kli Minyukov. In fact, we are talking about a keli that does have holes. The problem is the dogim mishum the rofo kamayu. The problem is that fish have very soft skin, kadmiu palti. Therefore, they will very quickly exude all of the juices that they contain. The ophis committee. Meanwhile, birds are harder, they're tougher, and therefore it takes longer for the juices to exude out of them. So therefore, bosted the naichi dogim. So after the fish has stopped exuding, plate the ophis. At that point, the bird meat, the chicken, is still going to be exuding blood. And then at that point the fish is going to start absorbing blood from it. So that's a problem. So as opposed to when you have two pieces of meat together, the same amount of time that it takes one of them to exude the same way as well, and they're both going to be doing it at the same time. And again, I use total the miflat like bola, as long as it's exuding, it's not going to absorb. Now Tosfos does bring up a point. What about though, for example, if you started kashering meat and then you added more meat and then you added more meat afterwards, aren't you going to have an issue then that the ones that you put in earlier are going to finish exuding their blood, and now they're going to start absorbing from the other one. And Tosfos says that's not a problem, because even after the blood, you still have, again, you have other juices, you have tsir that comes out, and therefore it's not going to. Fish, we're saying, because it's soft, it exudes everything before the chicken is finished, and therefore it's going to absorb. Tosfos also brings another point from the Re of Orleans, who says that as long as some of it is being poilot, as long as some of it is exuding, then all the other ones are going to then all the other ones are also going to be poilot. And even if some of them have already finished being poilot themselves, if they do absorb anything, Rabbi Yosef Meir Leinish says that whatever, even though they may absorb, they're just gonna exude it back out again anyway. So it's already open, and therefore it's only going to finish exuding later, and therefore it'll have time to exude what it absorbs now. So therefore you have much less of an issue. And Tosfos goes on to discuss various other details in this whole matter of kashering things together. Tosfos brings a story that happened once in Rashi's household. One time, what happened was that they kashered some meat, and then afterwards, after finishing kashering it, they put it in a barrel, and it was sitting there all night. The next morning, they found that there was a whole bunch of juice in there. So now the question is some of that juice blood, and therefore it's been soaking in blood all night, and therefore it would be a problem. And Rashi said that no, once it was salted, once it stayed in the salt enough time, then again, we're not going to assume that it's blood. It's moho ba'alma, it's only juice from it, and therefore it'll be fine. So similar to what we said before about once it was roasted enough, the same way once it was salted enough, then everything that comes out of it at that point is going to be chamar basar, is just going to be the liquid of the meat, the wine of the meat, and therefore there's no problem. So there's no problem kashering a bunch of pieces of meat together. There's not even a problem kashering some and then adding more to the pile later, because as Tosfos is explaining, it will continue to exude. Either it won't absorb in the first place, or if it does, then it'll exude it right back out again, and therefore you're fine. But again, to do chicken together with fish is a problem, because the fish, we're saying, absorbs very quickly, and therefore you're gonna have a problem. And in fact, in Shulchan Aruch it brings that even, for example, if you have tougher meat together with salt, together with softer meat, or even meat together with chicken, it'll be allowed, because again, they're not just exuding blood, they're exuding sear, and therefore it's fine. Meanwhile, there's still an extra time that they're exuding while the beef is still exuding its blood, and therefore it's mutter. That Ahmad does mention in that point, it does mention in that connection that if you have a piece that has a hollow inside it where blood could collect, then you better turn it over when you're cashing it to make sure the blood doesn't collect in there. That would only be like a tchila b'diyah, but it's not a problem. Okay. So in that connection, the Gemara says, "Ramoni bar Rochel imloch lebsar shfuta v'adi b'sar treifa." One time, Ramoni bar Rochel accidentally had in his household some non kosher meat was salted together with kosher meat. Now it was in a keilim with holes, so therefore the blood will drain away. But the question is, the same way as we're saying, when you have different things that are salted together, that it's all meat, and therefore one is going to exude at the same time the other is that going to work over here? But would we, therefore it would be fine over here, or would we say it's no good because over here it's today for meat, it's different? So also Kameh Rava, so he came to Rava to ask a shayla. So Rava answered him by quoting a braisa that says Atmeim, when the pasuk says Eila Atmeim Lachem, the following are Tomei for you. That means the following are tomei for you. That means and then hatmeim. We learn less of tzira, and it comes to include that by a sheret. This pasuk is talking about the shmona shrotzim, that you're also not allowed to eat juices that exude from them, the roitvan or the gravy that comes out of them when you cook them, the kifa shalahan, or the kifa, the sediment that falls to the bottom of the pot that we learned before. So in other words, anything that's also to eat, then you're also not allowed to eat tzir of it. Well, then, the problem is, you're talking about psar treifa, and therefore, anything that exudes from it is ulcer. So therefore, you're going to have a problem. In fact, it is going to be a problem because it absorbed. And in particular, so now, you can talk about, fine, there may not be a problem of absorbing blood, but there's a problem that's going to absorb, if nothing else, it's going to absorb moihel juice. And again, that juice, because we're talking about non-kosher meat, then therefore, you're going to have a problem with it. So the Rashba explains, actually the question was, of course, Rav Moni knew that while it's exuding blood, it could absorb moil, but his question is, now when it exudes, though, it exudes the rest of its blood, and its moil is going to exude that as well. And so Rava is telling him that no, if you see this liquid that comes out because of salting it, it's still osir. So therefore you see it's osir. Okay, so the Gemara asks, why did he need to tell him that? From that, the lame alame to Shmuel. Instead of telling him based on that it's also, Rava should have told him it's also based on what Shmuel says. Dama Shmuel maliach hareo kareseach v'kavash hareo kamagoshel. We said that something salted is considered like it's boiling, and when it's pickled or soaked, then it's considered like it's cooked. So based on that, then, here we're talking about these things were being salted together very heavily, and therefore that should be enough to make it also anyway. It's considered that it absorbed from the other one. Fine, a braisa is better than when a statement of an amora, Tosfos points out, but the fact is that we still need Shmuel's statement over here, as the Gemara is going to say over here, so therefore why did he even bring the braisa in the first place? And the answer is even the Shmuel, because if he brought him only Shmuel's din, have amina, you would argue, hanamili daman, that might only apply to the blood of them. In other words, again, if it was in a keli without holes, then you have a problem, because then it all soaks in there, and then it gets absorbed. But maybe the tzir, maybe the juice or the gravy that comes out of it, in particular the juice that comes out as a result of salting, maybe that's only considered, as we called it earlier in the Masechta, Zeya Ba'alma. It's almost like a sweat from it. It shouldn't really be osir. Kamash Malan. So therefore, Rava had to tell him the Braisa to say that nevertheless it is an issue. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem. We'll continue discussing this case of things that are salted together, and when we say that one of them answers the other, and when not, and different details in that regard.